Well, I'm Edith Rudick, and I live in the Big Eddy, and I was born here in Revelstoke, 1932. I've lived here all my life.
So I wanted to ask you, I was doing a story about Sandra Gregory in Revelstoke Unstuck, kind of what she started helping people shovel out, and she told the story about the time in the end of 2019, beginning of 2020, it was cold and snowy, and she stopped and picked you up. Can you tell me that story?
Well, I was on my way over to the Big Eddy Pub because the United Church Women were going to have a supper there. And I was on my way over. I got in front of the forestry office, and it was so cold and blowing, and I was walking with a cane. She stopped and asked me if I would like a lift. She took me over there, and she said, you know, anytime I needed help, just give her a call. And I told some of my other friends about it, and I guess it just carried on from there. But she was really good. And every time you wanted anything, just phone her, and someone was here. So I really appreciated it.
What was it about her that made you trust her to tell your friends and pass her number around?
I just trust people. I took her at her word, and she lived up to it. And I told most of them, they said that they didn't charge for their work. And I said, shoveling and stuff like that, I've done it myself all my life. And I knew how hard it was, so I said, well, you can't do it for nothing. So every time anybody came to anything, I offered them handmade things. They could have slippers, they could have socks, mitts, whatever they wanted. And they did. They appreciated. One fellow, in fact, he came here and he says, I don't really need anything, but could I have a pair of slippers for my nephew? It was his birthday or something coming up. I said, sure, help yourself. So I don't mind.
So a lot of people around town probably have they wear your slippers.
Yeah, I've made close to 700 pairs of slippers in the last few years. And Carol Sakamoto started me. She wanted somebody that could knit to help another lady that was doing it at Moberly Manor. And I said, sure. So I think the first time I turned in about 35 pairs, then I did 50, and then I kept track of them. I still have the records. So I didn't mind doing it. It was something for me to do. And when I'm looking after my son, both him and my husband worked on the railway, and I took all their calls so they could get an extra hour's sleep. I'd have their meal ready, their bags packed. All they had to do was get up, eat, and take off for work. And while I was sitting, I knit. I used to do a lot of crocheting, but since I hurt my hand, I haven't been able to do the fine crocheting. But I make afghans. I'm working with the large needles now. And I've got down to the point where now I can knit men's socks on number 12 needles, and I'm proud of that. But my fingers, the doctor told me on December 7th, I saw him, and he said, this one was called a trigger finger, and it would go like that, and I couldn't get it up. So he put some shots in here and here, and I see him again on January the 17th. And I'm hoping by then I'll have full recovery, because I love to do needlework. I've done it since I was 6 years old, and I do doilies and stuff like that, but right now I can't hold the hook. Try to hold the hook, and it goes this way, then that way, then I'm down there scrounging around like this, trying to get it off the floor. But the large needles I can handle well. So I've been making lap robes and stuff like that, and people that don't knit bring me wool, and I knit the stuff. So that way we help each other.
It occurs to me, because you live in this house that you said you and your husband built in 1957, and with people from that you know from Sandra Gregory who come to help, it probably helps you be comfortable to know that you can keep staying here. Is that true?
Well, I mean, we built it, and we've had people come from Alberta last year and ask me if we wanted to sell. I says, I live here. I'm not going to sell it. So I said, okay. But anyway, they give me the phone number and says, call them if I change my mind. I'll be in this house till I die. And I figure when I'm gone, it'll be my son's. At least he'll have a place to stay. So.
And then knowing that there are people from the community who will help you shovel out or anything that you need, it probably helps you know that I can keep on living here.
Yeah, well, right now, the community connection group, they've given me the phone number. I have one guy that comes and does the shoveling. Another guy comes, and if there's any other jobs I need done, he'll do them. And he came and he put plastic around, but the wind the last few days just ripped part of it off. So I phoned him yesterday. He's going to come again and do it because I cannot get up the ladder. I've shrunk over the last few years, and what I could reach before I no longer can. So I just do what I can and then call for help. But I'm very independent. So anyway, I try.
So Community Connections, that's the Better at Home group, and they come in and help you out too.
Yeah, yeah. Deborah Hogan, she's been very good about lining things up. In fact, yesterday they gave me a nice surprise. They brought me a parcel for my son and a parcel for me. Yeah, very pleased.
Wow, that's so nice.
Yeah.
And just from that time when you met Sandra and then all your friends started calling her too, did that change how you looked at the community at all, like how people support you and that there is help available?
That didn't make any difference. I mean, most of the people that I grew up knowing, they're dead. There's hardly anybody left. I still do the refreshments for the CP pensioners meetings every month. And there was 10 of us on the committee at first, and there's only 2 of us left. And I'm the one, the other one doesn't come to the meetings, so I do the baking and stuff for them. I don't mind. Mm-hmm. It's something for me to do. And I can do that in the home and still keep an eye on my son, so it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess being the age you are with a lot of people that you used to know aren't here anymore or maybe not well, it must be nice to know another part of the, like a younger part of the community then.
Yeah. Well, I just keep on carrying on. And I hope the good Lord gives me a few more years and I can do it, but I'll keep on being active. And I mean, until the guy came in here a little while ago, I was doing my own shoveling, but I couldn't get up on the ladder. So, but anything on the ground, I do it. I still keep the front open. And he looks after the back with a snowblower. I've got a snowblower in the garage, but the doctor says, don't let me even hear you using it. So it sits there. Yeah. But I'll do what I can. And I've done, as I say, I've worked in gardening. My dad gave me a little piece of ground when I was 10 years old, and I think I started by planting a few radishes. And I've done it every year since. My husband and I, we always did it our own work. We built the house. We did the cement work. We had a carpenter come in and put up the frame, and we did the rest of it. So I've had lots of practice. I know where most things were. I don't know where they are now, but I knew where they were. But when I got flooded out a couple of years ago, it really made a change in everything. I'm still trying. I had 2 inches of water in the basement, and I had an inch on the floor up here. And they just ripped out all the carpeting and everything else, heaved it outside. We take over from there, and I'm still finding stuff.
Still putting stuff away and everything?
Still trying to find it. A lot of stuff disappeared. I haven't found it yet.
Were your parents born in Revelstoke, or did they move here?
My father was born in Belfast, Ireland, and my mum was born in Berriedock off of Cardiff, Wales. And my mum, she was brought here as a baby. Her dad came here. She never really knew her mother, but her dad brought them here, and they lived on a 12-mile. And he worked in the bush, and my mum was a twin. And the two girls were by themselves all day. Someone said they had to get someone to look after, so the Clough family raised my mum, but she was never adopted. I've heard stories that she was adopted and a sister to the family there. She wasn't. She was never adopted, but they raised her. Mm-hmm. And she always figured that her dad paid them to look after her. And she was with them until she met and married my dad. And then they lived up. They had got a farm right up next to where the ski lodge is on Mount McPherson, and my son and I still own the 40-acre property, so take it from there.
Wow. Yeah. And then what did your dad, how did he get here?
He just came to Eastern Canada and worked his way across, just working in logging and stuff like that. He probably hitched a ride on the train. I don't know. He never talked about it. He always said, let sleeping dogs lie. We never would talk about his past. But he grew up in Belfast. In fact, him and my mom, they went over there in 67, I think it was. He took a bunch of slides of the place he thought was his house, and then he found out his house was on the other end of the block. So anyway, that was fun. Yeah.
And so you grew up, they farmed, so you grew up on a farm on McPherson?
Yeah.
What was that like?
We didn't know anything else. You know, we never had a car or anything. We were 5 miles from town there. We went to the Mount McPherson school until it closed. The family moved out. You had to have 10 to keep the school open. One family with 3 kids moved out. There was only, I think there was 5 or 6 of us left. And so we had 1 year of a correspondence course. And then we moved down. We bought the farm on 23 South. And then we went to the Big Eddy School, which was up where the Cullen Bridge Trailer Park is now. And then when they went into high school, well, then the first year I walked, and my dad got me a bicycle when I was 12 years old to go into grade 9, and went from there. But when they built the Big Eddy School, of course, my kids went there for a while. But we didn't even have a school bus when I started in high school. So the first year it was get there on my own power. And in the wintertime when the snow was deep and it was really cold, he boarded me out with friends down near the Lamplighter. I'd go down there Sunday afternoon and go home Friday night. And we managed. You grew up the tough way. I have to laugh sometimes in the store. They'll give me a package and they'll say, oh, that's too heavy for you. I just tell them I grew up on a farm. Used to lifting heavy things, but I don't mind. I just keep busy.
And I'm curious because it's December 21st now. We're close to the holidays. And I, just because I am talking to you, I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about how you celebrated Christmas or the holidays when you were growing up.
When I was little, we always had a tree there. My mom would put candles on it, but we were by ourselves. We were the last family up there, and we were by ourselves. And for years, we never even had a turkey. We never even heard of them. And then a family that was related to us on the prairie, they found out that we didn't, the family that they were more directly related to were supposed to share with us, but they never did. So if Mom had the chance, she'd cook a chicken or something like that. But it was always our own little group, and we never worried about it because we didn't know anything else. And after that, when the turkey would come, and then they'd give us a piece of the turkey to take home. But anyway, we managed. And then after, when we moved down closer to town, well, then we always had everybody there. All the family would come. But it was nothing. Even after we were married, sometimes there'd be 14 or 15 around a table. I'd put a big piece of plywood up in the living room and take it in chairs. And we managed.
Had a nice celebration.
Yeah. Yeah, when the kids were little, we always had the tree, and I decorated like crazy. I'd paint all the windows and everything, but I'm not doing anything this year because with one hand, what can you do? Mm-hmm. And you can't reach the ceiling without climbing on a ladder. And the doctor says, stay off the ladder. So I stay off the ladder. I'm not going to worry about it. It's just another day. I'll go to the church service on Saturday afternoon there, the evening service, and then Sunday we'll probably watch TV. So you do what you can.
You mentioned just that you're 90 years old now, and a lot of the people that you probably knew aren't around anymore. Do you still have a pretty good community in Revelstoke and some friends?
Oh, yeah. Mr. Boyle, he lives down in the trailer park, Alice Trailer Park, and he goes for coffee, and he has to go right by, so he stops and picks me up. We used to go to Nomad, but since it's closed, we go to the A&W again. And we meet Velda Koshman, comes down, and she's older than I am. And we meet down there. We go to church, to the United Church, and we do what we can. But like I say, there used to be a lot. We used to, when we first got out of the reunion at the high school there in 99, Sophie Salva, she was a real go-getter. And she lined everybody up, and every time one of us had a birthday, we'd go somewhere, and everybody would meet and in our class group. And there was quite a few of us for a while, and then all of a sudden, everybody's dying off, and they got pretty close, and she died. And now there's Lorna Duncan, Velda Koshman, and me, and Joy Melnick. We're the only ones left. So you do what you can. But I keep busy.
Would you say that's the trick to keeping, I don't know, like what do? You want to keep alive and keep on living. What's the trick to keep that spark in your eyes?
Just keep busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to keep, if you sit back and vegetate, it's no good just to sit down and do nothing. And I don't depend on others to do the thing for me. I do it myself. And if I can't do it, who's going to care?
I think that's all my questions. Is there anything else you want to say about the people who come and volunteer here from Better at Home or Sandra or anything like that? Any messages to them?
Well, they're a wonderful group. I know that. And I sure appreciate what they have done for me. And Deborah Hogan right now, she's just lining things up. And she says, here you phone, you want this, you want that. She gave me the phone numbers of the two guys. And they were there short order.
If you were talking to somebody else in your position, how would you convince them to get help from Better at Home or to hook up with them?
Phone number.
Just get the phone number.
Yeah. And there's different ones, like Mr. Boyle there. He's very independent. And anyway, he got their help, and he's got help over there now, and he's doing well. Mm-hmm. So if I know somebody that needs help, then I just tell them, well, phone this number, and that's about all I can do.
What difference does a little bit of visiting or a little bit of socializing make in somebody's life, do you think?
I think it makes a big difference. Because if you start feeling sorry for yourself, you're lost. You need to have an incentive. And with me, I took it out in needlework and yard work and everything else. And I've always worked for other people. In fact, when I was 16, the year I was turned into 16, I worked looking after Mr. and Mrs. Pratolini in the castle downtown. Mm-hmm. They had both had strokes. And just the night before he died, the woman where I was staying down there, she went up there, and the doctor bawled her out for letting a kid, as he called me, look after two old people like that. And I said, well, I didn't see anything odd about it. I did it.
How old are you?
12 at the time I started. I was 16 then. I graduated when I was 16. I couldn't get a job doing anything else because I was too young to get an unemployment card. I had to be 18 to get the unemployment card. So I packed groceries, I babysat, I cleaned floors and whatever. I did whatever I could. So I got by.
Keep busy and keep in company of others. That's kind of the secret, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you just sit and vegetate, you'll die quick. You need to have an incentive. So that's all I can do.